All right, Matt, I am so curious to know, what is a great 5-star review that we've gotten on Apple Podcasts?
Oh, we just got a new one. Whoa. And this is from Adam Painter. He calls our podcast a treasure for the ages. He says, you want jokes, singing, witty banter between two best friends? Las Culturistas has all of that and more. You can tell Matt and Bowen are having fun and they want to take you along for the ride as they break down culture with each other and their talented and hilarious lineup of guests. I don't think so, honey. People who aren't listening to Las Culturistas, thank you, Adam
Painter.
Thank
you, Adam Painter.
Come on, Adam Painter.
Come on. Ugh. Well, thank you so much, Adam. Now, Las Culturistas is brought to you by the Forever Dog Podcast Network, and you can follow Las Culturistas, the podcast, on Facebook and Twitter.
Guys, don't forget to get tickets to my show at the Duplex on December 12th and December 21st at 9:30 p.m. It's called Matt Rogers, Have You Heard of Christmas? It's going to be really fun. It's musical directed by Henry Kapersky and features Bowen Yang, Dave Mazzoni, Rachel Winitsky, and Catherine Cohen. I'm super excited about it, so get your tickets now at purplepass.com.
Look, Matt.
Where?
Oh, I see. My, oh, my.
Bowen, look over there.
Wow, is that Ooh. Culture? Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Las Culturistas.
Ding dong, Las Culturistas calling.
And you know what else is calling?
What?
The time of the season.
Oh.
And I believe that every season, mm-hmm. I'm talking, of course, about the Christmas season.
Yes.
We see a lot of these things. What mm-hmm. am I talking about? Bowls. Bowls of candy.
We have no such bowl on the table.
No, but laying free in front of us is many pieces of candy.
And you had pointed this out mm-hmm. like a true sociologist, anthropologist.
Thank you.
Whiz.
Thank you.
You said it's the time of year when people are sticking their fingers in bowls of candy.
Yes.
And I said, wow, I didn't realize that was a seasonal behavior.
Well, they do that with nuts all year round on bar tops. We all know, we've seen the bowls of nuts. And we hope,
and I
hope we know
I
to avoid the bowls of nuts.
I was going to say, I don't get near them.
I don't get near those. But then all of a sudden when it's like candy during the season, I don't even think about it. I dive right in. And what's the difference? There's no difference.
I guess.
You're getting sick either way.
And is it good or bad bacteria? We talked about this.
We did. And also, you know what? Probably a lot less kids at the bar where the nuts are. Mm-hmm. Probably a lot more kids at the family gatherings where there's the bowl of candy.
But the kids, though, have some sort of monitoring system built in where the parents are like, Tanner, wash your hands.
But do they listen?
No adult is getting that sort of system built around them.
I guess
you know that, what I'm
saying? That's right.
So is it dirtier at the bar?
I guess it also matters what's happening at the bar. You know, are they in an engaging conversation with someone that they're dating, and they run to the restroom, they go to the bathroom, maybe they don't wash their hands on the way out, and then all of a sudden hand goes into the nuts. It's just crazy.
It's just crazy.
It's just crazy to think about.
But you know what? In these crazy times, I think we need to bring in a very special guest.
Yeah, we need a rock.
We need a rock, and she's here with us tonight. And
truly,
we're so excited. And you know, we're thrusting all this responsibility on her, but that's fine.
She's the rock.
She's the rock. Okay, you guys. I mean, come on. She's
the female Dwayne Johnson.
The female Dwayne
Johnson.
That's
what the industry calls.
Absolutely.
Our guest.
She's always selfieing from skyscrapers, just like Dwayne does. Okay, guys. Our guest. You know, you've seen her in everything.
You have seen her in everything.
Words and everything. Master of None, BoJack Horseman.
We love.
Oh, she's in this new Hari Kondabolu series, The Problem with Apu.
Ooh,
she makes a little appearance in that.
Very
and I'm
not.
I didn't mean to scale it. I didn't mean to qualify it with little appearance. It's an appearance.
Now talk about what's premiering in January.
It's just
about that.
A new series on Comedy Central.
Oh,
Corporate. I can't wait. I've seen the promos. They're nice, minimalistic. I go, what could this be? And I can't wait to find out.
I can't wait either.
And maybe she'll tell us about it. And maybe she's written for Late Night with Seth Meyers. And you can check out her amazing album that came out last year. Just putting it out there. That's the title.
Wow.
Right.
See, you were just putting it out there, and also it's the title.
And also that's the
and
title.
And I wonder if that thought went into the naming of it.
That it just rolls off the tongue like a phrase, like an expression.
Guess we'll find out when we speak to
Aparna Nancherla.
Hi.
Hello. Now, I did say, feel free to dive into these candies. Now, here's the thing. Don't feel pressure because, as we said, it's a germ spreader.
Yeah.
But I'm not. That's not why I was withhold. Like not showing restraint.
Okay,
sure. Do you usually show restraint around something as hazardous, like infectiously hazardous as a bowl of bar nuts, for example?
I don't think I'm a germaphobe. If that is the qualifying standard.
No.
Yeah, you don't think you are.
No.
No. Okay.
Right. I think it's good for immune system.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You have to expose yourself a little bit.
Yes.
You know, I know people that won't even touch the rails on the subway.
Right.
And I said, this is problematic because then you become a projectile on the subway and you're flying all around hurting people. And that to me is
more dangerous.
It's 100% more dangerous and unacceptable.
Unacceptable.
Yes. Socially.
Socially.
Then but everyone's responsible for your physics.
Exactly. Yes. I will say, Parna, I wouldn't reach for the M&Ms just now because I have three in my hand.
You have three brown ones.
I have three brown ones just by coincidence. Mm-hmm. And I'm scared to put them in my mouth because I don't want the mic to pick up the chewing.
Oh, I know what you're doing.
I thought about that too.
Do you ever see the movie, what is it? It's with Matthew McConaughey and Jennifer Lopez. Is it not? It's not Made in Manhattan.
I know.
That's the one I was going to say.
That's Brie Fine's.
Wedding Planner.
Wedding Planner.
Okay. Oh. Do you remember in The Wedding Planner when, I think it was either him or her.
Okay.
And they were picking, I think it's him, and he was a dentist in the movie, or a pediatrician. He was a pediatrician in the movie.
Okay.
So he's picking out all the colored M&Ms, and she's like, why are you doing that? And he's like, well, I figure that, you know, these ones are brown, so there's got to be less artificial flavoring in them. And so I figure I'll only eat the brown ones because then you're getting less artificial flavoring. And I thought to myself,
that makes no sense.
That has to be the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
Who wrote that line, or do you think it was improv?
It was an improv, baby.
Imagine he came to set and was like, I actually thought up this amazing improv.
And it's science. It's based in science.
Yeah, he did character research.
Oh, my God.
No, I'm saying, but he thought, like, he truly believed that the artificial coloring thing was true. And he brought it to the table. We'll never know.
We'll never know.
We'll never know. Are you a J-Lo fan?
I like J-Lo, but I don't know if I'd identify as a fan.
Right. You appreciate what she is.
Yeah.
If she was in a room with you and you felt so compelled and moved to go up to her, strike up a conversation.
Yeah.
Would you say I'm a fan?
Oof. I think I might out of nervousness.
Yes. Say it. But this is something that our last guest, Guy, said, or two guests ago, Guy said.
What did he say?
Oh.
He said that.
He said a lot.
I bet he had some strong opinions.
Oh, very strong opinions. Very strong.
But he always appreciates it when people approach a celebrity in a collegial status.
Yes.
That they're on the same level as that person, which is kind of insane.
Well, they say you don't want to appear as like a fan because then you're like a crazy fan.
Oh, yeah. I see.
Yes.
So I feel like you, Aparna, could just walk up to J-Lo and then just start talking about your projects.
Oh.
And then she'd be like, okay.
Oh, this, yes.
I think of J-Lo as such a, I think anytime someone has multiple hats, or they're like hyphenated in their, you know, work.
Yes.
I think I get intimidated.
Okay.
Because I don't even know where to place her.
Right.
Right. It's like, and how does she identify?
Yeah.
You know, is she identifying that particular day as an actress or a recording superstar?
Right.
You can't, the onus is not on you to figure it out.
Right.
So it's impossible. You shouldn't talk. The right answer was you shouldn't have spoken to her.
It's actually rule number 64 of culture.
Never speak to a multi-hyphenate. That's
speak
true.
To them.
Don't speak. But Aparna, I would characterize you as a multi-hyphenate.
I guess, yeah. I mean, I think in comedy it's interesting because you can write and act and tweet?
And tweet.
You can write, act, and tweet. And that's why they call you a three-tool player.
Yep. You're a triple tool.
A triple threat.
No.
A triple threat.
Triple threat is singing, dancing, acting. This is a triple tool
that's
player.
That's a three-tool player.
Three-tool player. I'm sorry.
I think that's why, because she's a triple threat in the traditional sense.
Yes,
and you are
a
three-tool player.
But of course, she's a worthless tweeter.
We are all three-tool players at this table. Three-tool players.
And I'm a dancer, too.
And you're a dancer.
Oh, wow.
I'm, of course, a dancer. Yeah, the fourth tool of my tap shoes.
There you go. There you go.
If you had a fourth tool, what would it be? What's this talent we don't know about you?
Reading.
Yes.
Reading.
The books.
So essential.
Essential.
To be able to read in this industry?
And for,
I don't think enough people read in this industry.
You know, no. But okay, we can talk about this.
Let's talk about it. Because where else are we going to talk about it?
I've fallen off on my reading until recently, and now I'm picking it up again. It feels right.
Here we go. Talk about this book that you just read, and then we'll get some feedback from the table.
Sure. So I just flew back in from Thanksgiving on Sunday, and on the plane ride, I finished Call Me By Your Name, the book by Andrea Simon, and then loved it. Was a wreck. Like,
enraptured by the book.
Enraptured by the book. Had some issues with the pacing, as I've mentioned and documented on this program. But then we landed and finished the book within minutes of landing, and I was like, I have to see this movie tonight.
Yes.
And I really just took advantage of my New York LA privilege of early releases, and I went by myself to go see it, and dove head first into the waters of this adaptation, and was of course disappointed, because how is it going to live up to a book where every character is emotionally realized and fleshed out?
Right.
And so didn't like it. And then I just let me say this, Culturistas, there is a whisper network of gay men and just queer people who do not like Call Me By Your Name, the movie, and I count myself. I'm going to out myself as one of them.
I would say you are really holding back right now, because you literally have said to me, and quote, and I quote,
no,
fuck that movie.
I did not say that.
You said fuck that movie.
I did not say that.
You said you hated it.
I'm going to out someone else right now.
Go ahead.
Friend of the show, prior guest of the pod, John Early.
Okay, here. Wow, you are too much.
No. So John,
he is a public figure. He could get in a lot of trouble.
No. This is what happened.
You could get Aparna in trouble for saying that about John.
No.
One of the biggest five tool players.
He's got five tools.
He's got the tap shoes
and more.
And the singing.
The vocals on it.
Well, John, this is what. So John tweeted. Literally, this was a convergence of Call Me By Your Name things. Right before I stepped into the movie, I'm on Twitter one of the tools, and then I see John tweets, "Call me by your nah," and everyone is like, "Whoa, what?"
Just incendiary. Probably got many reactions on.
Got
the
a lot of reactions, and I was like,
"Can't imagine."
I was like, "Okay, I guess John didn't like the movie," and I watched it, and I will confidently say it did not color my perception, or it did not sway me one way or the other.
Okay,
but I watched it, and then I came out of the movie, and I texted John. I go, John, I just came out of Call Me By Your Name too, and I didn't like it either. Oh my God, and I think I hate it too, unless you didn't hate it, OMG. And then he texts back like 20 minutes later, he was like, no, I fucking hated it. And he was the one who said, and I have the receipts, and maybe this is unfair.
You are burning a bridge.
He said, fuck that movie.
Well,
and then he tweeted Michael Stuhlbarg, who plays the father, who has this amazing monologue at the end.
Performance.
He goes, Michael Stuhlbarg, fucking sucks too. But more on that later. Oh, I can show you. And so John is them's fighting words.
Them's fighting words. He's coming out for Call Me By Your Name. Have you seen Call Me By Your Name?
No.
Do you know
nor
about?
Nor read it.
Yeah. That's well. Fine. Honestly, I would say, and somebody asked me yesterday, like, should I see this? And I was like, I feel like you should see it.
People should see it. Here's the thing, though. I feel like it's not for a queer audience. It's for
straight people.
Or it's just for people to, like, understand that, like, queer narratives have this latent desire built into them, and this is, like, the example of that. But, like, also, like, we'll go and we'll be like, oh, yeah, like, and even people who understand, like, what that is will go to that movie and be like, yeah, no, duh.
Yeah, of course.
Like,
in order to understand that nothing happens in your gay life until later, you don't need nothing to happen in the first hour of a movie.
That's what we're getting at.
They ride their bikes to the lake.
Too heavy-handed with the pacing.
With the pacing, with the tension building.
Yeah.
So, Aparna, I expect a full review after you see it.
I will live tweet it.
Thank you. But,
yeah, I would say that you need to use one of your tools. This is for the table. Is there a movie that was better than the book?
Oh.
I want to say yeah, right? There's got
to
be one.
Well, definitely any movie where the book was made after the movie.
Well, yes. You know what I've never read, but
no,
I don't think it can possibly be as good as the movie?
What?
The Devil Wears Prada.
Yes.
Oh.
Because you don't have Meryl Streep in the book.
I know.
Right.
Famously,
right.
She can do a lot of things. She can't appear in a book.
She can't appear in a book. Neither can Emily Blunt. Let's not forget about
Emily.
She can't
be there either.
Or Anne, too.
Also can't appear in the pages
of the
book.
Or the lead singer of Rooney.
He can't either.
Who is in that. But also... The Wizard of Oz, of course.
Oh, right.
Unless the book is maybe more mythologized, more completely, but the movie, though.
Yeah. The movie's pretty iconic.
So we've answered the question.
I don't know.
I think we've answered it.
Do you think that there's a book that's better
I didn't even know The Devil Wears Prada was a book.
Oh, yes.
It was.
I think that it was like a former, like, or she wrote for like some tabloid or like an
she was Anna Wintour's assistant.
And she was, and then she came out with this book, and it, like, of course, took the world by storm.
Took the world by storm, honey. Well, where was school for you?
I went to college in Western Massachusetts.
Okay. Mm. Amherst?
Yeah.
Amherst.
UMass Amherst or Amherst that? College?
Amherst College, the little one.
It's one of the Amherst when people say Western Mass.
One of the baby colleges.
Not maybe, you know, not necessarily. I'm that was just a lucky guess.
Oh.
But Amherst is a great town.
It is. Yeah. Very new agey.
Yeah.
Oh.
Very liberal. Very liberal.
Yes,
very liberal.
Unusual for a college town.
Especially in Massachusetts.
Absolutely.
Liberal for even that. Oof.
Although Western Mass is kind of rural. No, I
don't know. I think Western Mass is weirdly progressive, or at least this area, I think, because of the colleges.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you're right. Like, Boston has some very conservative strains.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You can't be that loud and drunk
no.
and be a liberal person.
And be for single payer.
well, Boston College.
Yes.
See, I didn't get I didn't understand what a Jesuit school was.
Right.
And then I don't know why I didn't understand it, but I didn't understand it. But we went there to look at it, and I was like, oh, absolutely not.
Right.
Absolutely not. Yeah. You're not even in Boston proper.
Is that true?
You're not in Boston proper.
Really?
It's a little bit out. That's Boston University, honey.
That's in Boston.
Right in Boston proper.
Tufts, honey.
Medford.
Yes, honey. Emerson, honey. Right in the heart of the city, baby.
Absolutely. You walk out, and there it is, the harbor.
Jay Leno.
What?
Their biggest alumni is Jay Leno.
That's
they
not true.
Wouldn't.
No.
Yes, it is. Whoa. They wouldn't stop talking about Jay Leno there.
Wow.
We'll look it up at the break. I'm almost positive I'm right.
Oh my God.
Just like I was almost positive that Hugh Hefner was dead 4 months prior to him being dead.
Sure.
I broke the news of his death on the show.
Did you really?
Yes,
we did.
And then we had to record something to go in front of the episode that said, just kidding, he's not dead. Excuse the first 5 minutes of this episode.
So, yeah, absolutely.
Where I confirmed the passing of Hugh Hefner.
But presciently you did.
But
yes,
I'm more confident saying that Jay Leno went to Emerson.
Okay. But there's still a degree of uncertainty.
I would say that I am willing to risk it all.
Aparna, besides...
willing to risk it all.
Besides... I was going to say something so annoying. I was going to say, besides you, who is, like, the biggest alum to come out of Amherst? But just who is the biggest alum to come out of Amherst?
No, I think David Foster Wallace.
Oh, that's a good one.
Probably,
yes,
probably a little bit bigger than you, I think.
I would
but
say
so
you
Matt
surpassed
Besser.
Him. Oh, fun.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, I'd say David Foster Wallace probably wins out of the three of you guys.
I'm going to say I want like a The Hours type movie where you follow David Foster Wallace at college, you follow Matt Besser at college.
And you follow Aparna at college.
And Aparna goes to a UCB show in her youth. With what?
I'm enraptured.
Yeah.
With a copy of, you know,
Infinite
Jest.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna try to go for another one, but I couldn't think of one. And you know, it all converges at a partner.
Absolutely, you'd be the Meryl Streep in that scenario.
Oh.
And then we have brought it back around. She can't be in the pages of a book, but she can be in this dream
in
scenario
this,
of an Aparna
yes.
film.
Absolutely.
And Aparna would be played by Meryl.
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely.
As we all hope to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. But she can pull off... No one would be mad that Meryl would be playing just someone... No physical resemblance at all. Right? No, people would be mad.
I think Meryl would be an amazing me. I think she'd play me amazing.
Yeah.
I think she would be... Yeah.
I think she would do
us all justice.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know about
hard
me.
It's hard with us because... We are different.
We look
cultures.
Different.
Absolutely, but you know, if anyone was going to do it, that
yes.
like it would be Meryl.
Yeah, I don't think she would approach either my nor Aparna's sort of emotional. For Aparna's case, emotional complexity. For my case, emotional simplicity. She would overshoot
That's
it.
That's a horrible thing.
She would add depth to me that was not there. And
I think that's
I think
that's
that would
horrible.
That would play that would be very, very easily. Just people would see that and be like, "That's it'd be so transparent." People would be like, "Bowen was never like this, you know. Bowen was not this emotionally mature." So that's my thing with Meryl.
Do you think that the author that she played in adaptation was as wonderfully fabulous to watch as Meryl was in adaptation?
Oh, you're talking about...
You think Dingo Ate My Baby was this amazing miracle of a person?
You're talking about... But for adaptation,
Susan
Orlean, who is wonderful, has her own podcast now.
That's fine. Is she as good as Meryl Streep to watch?
I don't know. Stop it. She taught some classes at NYU.
I don't care.
Okay.
Everyone has a podcast.
Everyone has a podcast nowadays.
Everyone teaches at NYU.
Everyone has a podcast. It's horrible.
Partner, do you still have your podcast?
We're trying to resuscitate it.
It's good to
shop
it
around to a network.
Yeah.
You got to have a network these days. We love our people at Forever Dog. Hi, producer Joe.
They're not our people. They're people their own, and we work together. They're not our people. It's horrible for you to say.
Not the literal possessive. I'm just saying they're in our camp.
Yeah.
But you know, Aparna, you have to find the right people, and you have to be able to call them our people comfortably.
Have you guys been working together from the beginning?
From the jump. And
that's the dream.
Are you asking about since birth?
Hmm?
You're asking about since birth?
Yes.
No.
No.
Okay. We didn't know each other when we were born.
Okay.
But many years later, we did meet. And then from that point on, we did work together.
Great.
From when we met. Yeah. But I will say that... We have had some difficult moments.
With who?
With me and you.
Okay. Like what?
Well, I would say that in the very beginning of our relationship, Bowen was threatened by me. Not because of why you'd think, which I don't know why you'd think, but he thought that I was straight and trying to date the girl that he liked, allegedly. Yes, we did have a difficult moment about a female woman.
About a female woman, and this was when we were both in the closet, early days of college, and I felt threatened, and I said,
Bowen thought that I was going to date Shermung Bielefeld,
who now works at BarkBox.
Yeah.
Hi, Shermung.
I saw her at the place where I wait tables the other day, and I had
You saw her where? Years.
I saw her at Brooklyn Crab, like, at the
You didn't
at
tell
the
me
end
this.
Of the summer. Our old friend Mung, she came into Brooklyn Crab where I wait tables, and I saw her, and it was like I had to do it like a double take. In fact, I took their order first.
Yes.
And then I was like, oh my God, you are Mung! And she was like, yes, hi. And then we had like a conversation, and I texted Bowen, of course.
Oh.
And it took me back to this place of animosity.
Yeah. But
wait,
you know,
where did you guys go to college?
NYU. New York University.
Oh, okay.
New York University.
So and it isn't crazy that she would show up again.
No. In fact, I would say likely.
It was likely, but you know, that was the to think that Matt and I just our origin story starts with over a girl is very ironic.
Crazy.
Yeah.
You know, I would also say that we probably have to be like what the 107,000th most notable person of NYU. Probably many thousands of people more notable than us from there.
Oh.
Not like Amherst, where it's like you, David Foster Wallace, and Besser. With the Olsen twins coming out of NYU.
It would have to be like the 100.
That puts us at least
there?
3 and 4.
Yeah. I forgot they went to school there.
They did.
Aparna, we're going to ask you the question now that we ask all of our guests, which is, what was the culture that made you say, culture is for me? What was the culture that was...
formative for
you. Wrapped in a blanket, tied to the beak of a stork.
Yeah.
The stork flew in with a little, you know, a little mailboy cap and just gently placed it on your doorstep. And you opened it and you said, wow, I've arrived at culture.
You remember the scene from The Prince of Egypt, the movie, animated film about the birth of Moses?
Yes.
And the story of Moses. You remember in the beginning of the film when Moses goes down the river in the basket and arrives
from the movie
at the feet of the
pharaohess.
The pharaohess. You are the pharaohess here, and Moses is
the
your
culture.
Culture that...
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wait, would that one count as the book being better than the movie?
Yes. I think The Prince of Egypt is better than the Bible.
At least Exodus, the book of Exodus.
Absolutely.
Right, the movie better than the book.
I liked it. It had much better songs.
Yes, absolutely.
I can't sing any of these songs in the Bible. The Bible needed more songs. It needed a much better score.
Yes, absolutely. But that's the question.
I feel like I started Like, I tried to go back really early when I was thinking about this question, and I just landed at Sesame Street, but then I was like, is that what everyone says?
No.
Beautiful, they don't say they, that.
People haven't said that.
But you know what? That's because they're not smart enough to say that.
And Sesame Street, I mean, it's what a nice universal touchstone.
Oh, my gosh.
I wonder if it still is, though, because what...
It is. It affects lots of kids still to this day. And you know what they do, which I think is really good? There's an autistic character.
Yes, I've heard about this.
Really?
Yeah. Did you see The Night of Too Many Stars?
Yes.
They did a second where it was like they flashed to Sesame Street and it was there's an autistic character and there's her best friend who kind of like not speaks for her but helps her communicate because she's there with her and they're kind of like a duo on the show.
Yeah.
But it's beautiful.
That
it's
is wonderful. Beautiful.
It's wonderful.
And they're little cute Muppets.
They're adorable.
Ugh, I love it.
And didn't they have the first HIV positive character?
They did.
Yeah.
They did. They did.
But he was also a Muppet? He was also a Muppet? They?
They were, I believe, a character on the show, a Muppet. Yeah, I don't think they were an actor.
No.
Mm-mm.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like, you hear about it doing all these groundbreaking things. Yeah. You're like, God, mm-hmm. I didn't even know that was still on.
Partner, I love that answer. Now, what, let's say you were being asked, you were booked on Sesame Street.
Mm-hmm.
What was, and you were being presented with, you had to present the letter of the day. What's your letter?
Oh man, I'm gonna go with N.
N, you know what? Yeah, and then there's a little snack. There's some M&Ms, and then you go no, we're gonna nibble N on the M&Ms.
Oh my
gosh. Think that's wonderful.
That's beautiful. Who would your scene partner be? Who was your favorite character on Sess?
I loved Grover.
Grover's the best one. That Grover is the best one.
Mm.
Who was your favorite?
I love that Grouch. I love Oscar the Grouch. I love unapologetic.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I refer to her as the Grouch. She was never having it.
No.
No.
I recently saw a little bust of Oscar the Grouch, and it was like something you could stand next to and pose. And then I just sat next to that thing, and we threw a lot of shade.
You and Oscar. Oscar's
I love that
queen.
Oscar the Grouch.
You're right. Oscar
Cookie
never...
Monster is the one, too.
Oh, yeah. Cookie Monster.
But Grover was so lovely and loving, and Grover had no hang-ups. Like, Cookie Monster, the only subject matter you could talk about with him was cookies.
So what?
I'm saying, with Grover, you can open up, and you don't... He's not going to hijack the conversation from you.
I got to tell you something. I can't picture Grover in my mind's eye.
You don't know
who the fuck is Grover?
Do you know what we're talking
Super
about?
Super Grover?
Super Grover?
With the little knight's helm?
Yes.
Yes. Oh my god.
Cape?
And the cape. Oh, you don't know Grover?
I know Elmo.
The blue one.
I know the Cookie Monster.
The blue one.
The blue one with the pink nose.
Yeah, no. I have time for two blue Sesame Streets, and it's Cookie Monster and Gonzo.
Gonzo.com.
Gonzo's a Muppet.
Though.
Oh shit.
I mean, they're all technically Muppets, but like Gonzo's more Jim Henson.
You're telling me Gonzo wasn't in Sesame Street?
He might have made it a cameo like Kermit would every now and then, but wasn't a Kermit. Staple character.
Oh my god. Is it crazy that we're not saying Big Bird?
Absolutely.
I never loved Big Bird, and I feel bad saying that even out loud.
What is it about her?
I don't know. I think I may be too big.
Probably too
which
big.
Which I feel weird about saying out loud.
No, because you know what? I saw that Billy on the Street episode where it was Big Bird and Michelle Obama in that grocery store, and I did not understand the engineering behind that puppet. I was like, how many people are in there?
Yeah.
Like, it's got to be a person in a suit, right?
But it's
or
just
multiple.
It's like an 8-foot tall thing.
Yeah.
It's on stilts, I guarantee.
Right?
But then
it can't be because the legs
the arms,
move so natural.
And the arms are gigantic. The hands are gigantic. Someone's operating the blinking, like, and the mouth. Like, what is the mechanism?
I think it's also because a lot of the Muppets felt like kids to me. And for some reason, Big Bird did not feel like a kid. But I think that might have been my size bias.
You're a size in the queer community. You're a size queen. And I want to say that Big Bird... a little too chilled out, and I as a kid, it really it rattled. It was jarring. I was like, "Why is he that calm? No one should be this calm."
I don't get it at all. I think it's very disquieting. I agree with you, and I also would say that
What would you say?
I would say that Big Bird, the timbre of Big Bird's voice, something was very wrong.
Like this? Yeah.
Yeah, something was very wrong.
Hey,
yeah,
it was birds very, don't talk like that.
But they don't talk like that. Also, I have to ask this question. What kind of bird is that? I mean, we don't, we understand that it's a big bird, but we don't know what kind of bird
it's
that is. And
I
demand
confusing.
An inquisition
very
into
confusing.
This.
Very confusing. And you are setting an unrealistic expectation in child's minds about what an avian creature looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't look like that.
No.
They don't look like that. They certainly don't. And honestly, is it some sort of ostrich? Because
right.
why is it in
no.
America? And certainly why is it in New York
and
City?
It's all yellow.
Certainly why. You know what? This is a fashion icon on Sesame Street. The
sure.
Count. The Count. I'm saying the
oh,
Count is it.
The Count.
Oh.
The accessories. The cape.
Yeah, but
the hair.
You're going to
yes.
come for Cookie about being just about Cookie, and you're not going to come for Count about just being counting? It's ridiculous.
Numbers.
But that's very pro-capitalism.
It's,
yeah,
well,
and I'm not
that
about
I
that.
Would argue that the Count's obsession with numbers means that he wants to have a conversation. He wants to talk to the world in terms of universal languages, which is math. Which is numbers.
Oh.
Everyone knows what numbers are. Everyone can relate to numbers. No
okay,
matter
I'm,
what
you're, I'm with you now. It's a universal language.
The Count is a diplomat, the diplomat of Sesame Street.
Mm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I would say I love Elmo, but I have a problem with Elmo.
Yeah.
And it's less to do with Elmo as a person and more to do with the way I believe he was presented over time.
Oh.
His thing became too much about tickling. And,
oh,
you know,
yeah.
as we go forward in time, you have this idea that, you know, not everyone would want to be tickled.
Yeah.
Right. Invitations to tickle the child that was Elmo.
Yeah.
I don't know if I feel comfortable with his image being tickle.
Yeah.
Yes.
Did you guys see Tickle, the documentary?
Oh, no. I've heard about this up and down, though. Have you seen it?
I'm normally not disturbed.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, tell us
I
about
was
it.
Super disturbed.
Yeah, okay.
But also because I don't even know, I don't want to give it away. Not that you can really give a documentary away.
Talk
but
more about it, though. I want to
hear. I feel like Tickle is like a front. It's like a documentary front. Like the premise is a front,
oh.
and then when you learn what it actually is, it gets a lot darker.
Oh no.
Yeah.
It's like Million Dollar Baby.
It's like Million Dollar Baby. The front is a rom-com, but then you realize
it's more than that.
It's more than that. It's a sports film.
You haven't seen that film.
I haven't.
You haven't seen Million Dollar Baby?
I don't like Clint Eastwood. Clint Eastwood
seen Million Dollar Baby.
Fuck
well,
off.
Here, I'll tell you this. When you know a little bit about Million Dollar Baby.
Yeah.
What do you think it's about?
Clint Eastwood.
In
sports.
In sports. Boxing.
Right. You think it's about boxing?
It's not.
I will give you away what it is.
What is it?
It is a drama about euthanasia.
Really?
What?
Yes.
Who's being euthanized?
Would you like me to tell you? Spoiler alert for those of you out there who have not seen the 2004 film that won Best Picture at the Oscars, Million Dollar Baby. I'm going to give away the end of
Morgan
Million
Freeman?
Dollar Baby. Stop.
Morgan
Freeman, tell you.
Morgan Freeman's in the movie.
He's very much in the film
yeah.
in a supporting role.
Okay, who gets euthanized?
There is a scene where Hilary Swank is boxing and there's a break in the match and she's swung at by her competitor. She gets punched, falls, and she snaps her neck on the chair. So this happens like...
What chair?
I'm gonna say,
what chair?
There's a chair nearby. Listen... Best Picture winner.
Okay.
We can't argue with it.
Okay.
The logic is inarguable.
Okay.
It won.
Okay.
You know, like many before. So, just like Crash. You know, you can't argue with
you
Crash.
You can't argue with
it
Crash.
Won.
It's
with
a perfect
Crash.
Film.
It just won. It's perfect. Nothing problematic
Nothing
or horrible
it.
About it at
no.
all.
No.
Not even a bad script. It won. So, she snaps her neck on this chair, which is there.
Ooh.
And then, this happens about two-thirds of the movie in. So there's a lot of movie left to go.
The Chekhov's gun of the movie is a chair. That's
insane. I don't even think the chair appears in the first third. So there's no warning about this chair. There's never even a character that says, like, better watch out for these chairs. You know, if you leave them out, someone could snap their neck.
But you're saying there's not even one seatable piece of furniture in the first two acts of the film.
It's very suspect, but it won Best Picture. And so
okay, we can't question it. Okay,
can't.
So
she does snap her neck on this chair.
And she's unconscious for the rest of the movie?
No. She becomes paraplegic.
Oh, no.
And
oh,
so
no.
There is no one there. Or her, okay. Her mother is very, like, white trash, like, yeah. Wants her to, like, give her the money that she has from being a boxer or something. Like, mm-hmm. They want, like, there's this very upsetting scene where, like, all her life, Hilary Swank has, like, tried to gain the favor of her family and, like, the love of her family. And she's, the mother comes there and she's, like, pretending to love her and everything. And then she wants her to sign this piece of paper that says they're gonna get all her money or something, and she comes literally in her like Disney World Mickey Mouse shirt. Like they're like on the way, I think. And she goes as far as to put the pen in Hilary Swank's mouth to get, because she can't use the rest of her body.
Right.
She's a quadriplegic.
She's a quadriplegic. Oh. She's okay. A complete yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
She's completely unable to move from the neck.
Okay.
Down.
Okay.
There's harrowing scenes of her trying to like end it because she's like a boxer. She wants to live. Right. She wants to. Just, she doesn't want to live anymore.
Already...
It's horrible. And you don't. You think the movie is going to be about a woman boxer?
Oh my!
But it's
God.
Not. It's paraplegia. It's very quadriplegia. So she puts the pen in Hilary Swank's mouth, and Hilary Swank is supposed to like sign it with her mouth.
No.
And Hilary Swank. She spits out the pen
yes.
And says, get out of here. And the mother, like, leaves in a huff. And so she says to Clint Eastwood, you know what I want you to do.
Oh,
and
no.
She is giving him the message that she doesn't want to live anymore and she's not able to carry this out.
Hmm.
So she puts it to him to make the decision to end her life.
Mm.
And he does.
Whoa.
That's a lot.
That is a lot.
It is a lot.
We should go see.
That was what was so heartbreaking about it is because, like, it won all these Oscars. And Hilary Swank won a second Best Actress Oscar. Woo, woo, woo. Like, it's going to be about boxing. There'll be triumphant story of the spirit. Triumph, triumph, triumph,
right.
Triumph. And then you go there and it's this just devastating.
Yeah.
It's horrid.
Oh, my God.
And
she also,
really plays some real tragedies.
Yeah. She doesn't know how to do light. Hilary Swank.
She did one light movie, I want to say.
What did she do that
I
was ever
like...
light? Besides playing Heidi Klum in an SNL sketch.
She was really good on SNL.
She was a really good Heidi Klum on Project Runway. Yeah.
Forgot.
She bizarrely does all these tragedies, and then she's like one of the better like
comedic
SNL hosts.
Yeah.
Mm.
You know what? I think there's a campaign to be had about booking her for something. You know, light.
You know what? Freedom Riders. Remember that movie she did, Freedom
yes.
Riders?
Yes.
That you know that had some darkness in it. You know that couldn't have been a joy to watch the whole time. She was in a movie about like, hi, I'm a white woman at this all black school, and we're gonna learn
oh,
how to write.
Right.
Oh, literally,
wasn't
it was
she
that.
In P.S. I Love You?
Sure, she was in P.S. I Love You, and her husband is dead in it the whole time.
All right, you're right. She's heavy.
No.
Heaviness follows her.
She's heavy. Let me tell you something. She's no
nothing wrong with heavy though.
She's no Rachel McAdams.
Well. All right.
Just picked any actress that's been in any light movie.
Anyway, Sesame Street. Yes, I just want to just to bring this back to Sesame Street. And for, you know, for me, growing up a little boy, not really knowing what English is, it was a very nice thing to have. That's the, you know, that's just what I wanted to say.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting looks.
I was a
no.
Barney.
I just suddenly had a flashback to when I was in like maybe fourth grade, and this girl who was like the cool girl
uh-huh.
said she never watched Sesame Street even when she was little, and I was so disturbed by what it took to be cool in my mind.
Well, that, what happened to her?
That what
I don't know.
What it took to be cool in your mind was like withhold, like just or just not.
Well, that even when you're like four, you know that Sesame Street
right.
is for babies.
Damn, that sucks. Or that even when you're four, like being cool is. Not engaging
yeah.
with something.
Yeah.
Ugh, I hate that.
I know.
I hate superiority. I think it's the least attractive
it's
quality.
Terrible.
Well,
it's
outside of like, you know,
so many other
being
things.
Being racist, being a sexist, being
which is
homophobic.
A form of superiority, honey.
Absolutely it is.
It's
and
true.
You know what? That's thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah that's
you're welcome.
The core of it.
I just
it's the four tools.
I don't like it when people come in there and they say, I'm not doing that, or I'm better than this, or when they roll their eyes at like, I remember this happened to me in high school. we were playing Manhunt. And we were far too old to be playing Manhunt.
Oh, yeah.
And some kid drove up in his car, and he was 2 years younger than us, too. We were, like, 17 years old playing Manhunt.
I'm not familiar. What's Manhunt?
Manhunt is like hide-and-go-seek, but higher stakes because it takes
There's
place
cars.
At night and
oh.
on a larger scale.
Okay.
And he was that like, oh, I'm not going to play Manhunt. And I was like, wow, you are so much better than us.
Although, if you were in a social situation now and everyone was like, let's play Manhunt and hide around the fucking city,
you'd say
like,
no for different reasons. You wouldn't say no because you were better than
we were
that.
Above it.
You would say no because, hey, yeah. listen, that's not safe. We live in New York
right.
City, etc.
This isn't a good time. In this climate. Right.
Absolutely.
To be jumping out.
Yeah.
Screaming.
I just think there's a really fine line between superiority and just discomfort and saying no. You're putting a lot of stigma on saying no when that's not the time to be doing this. So I think you should really think about what you're saying, Matt. I'm sorry, Aparna, you're catching us at a really antagonistic time. But you know, this is just the dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
It's because of the weather, I think.
It's because of the weather. Okay, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back with Aparna and Charla.
Okay, listen up, everybody. We have a new initiative in place. It's time to talk some business, wouldn't you say, Bo?
I would say so. Okay. Absolutely.
Now, this new initiative that we're doing, I think that we have done pretty well. I think Las Culturistas, we've all had a good fun time here.
Good fun time, but
it's time.
It's time to raise the ceiling.
Oh, yeah.
As they say, and reach the ceiling.
And reach for the stars, and reach for the top.
Of the charts.
Of the charts, honey.
We want to be chart toppers in this new initiative called Operation Chart Topper, or the Chart Topperation,
or Project
Chart Topperation, or the Chart Topperation Project.
Now, whatever you choose to call this, here's the point. We want everyone to subscribe to this podcast. We want reviews, honey, that are nice, and we want 5-star ratings. Now, it's not really just enough to garner all these things, is it, Bo?
It's not. We have to get all of these things, specifically in this order, subscribe, rate, 5 stars, and review, so the little typey typers at Apple can go, oh, look, boss, a blip.
Yeah.
And that blip is going to be the Culturistas, the movement that is Las Culturistas.
Yes. And so here's what's going to happen. It helps this movement, and it helps trick these little computer babies over at Apple and iTunes if we all do this at the same time.
Yes.
So here's what's going to happen. Here's the project chart operation. We, in just a moment, are going to say,
Go.
And then from that go, you have 20 seconds, which is all it should take you,
all
really.
All it should take you.
To go subscribe if you haven't, give us that 5-star rating, and write a kind little review.
Now, what can go in your review? Yes.
What can go in the review? Tell them.
You can give us a rule of culture and number it, and we might read it on the pod.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You can tell us what your culture that made you think was culture was for you was.
Or you can just, you know, be kind.
Yeah.
Literally try to outdo each other with how rapturous the review can be.
Yes.
How about that? Now, listen. Every week, we're going to be coming back, and we're going to be reporting to you on how many different reviews we've gotten. We want to keep upping the stakes, and we will read some of these reviews.
Yes.
So are you ready to get this started?
I'm so ready to get this started. Let's go. On the count of three, let's say the
and
word.
And what should we do in the 20 seconds to fill this time?
Oh, let's catch up. Let's talk about what we're going to do this week, like what our plans are.
Okay, I love that. It's nice and simple. All right, ready?
Yeah.
Everyone, one, two, three,
go. What do you have going on this week, Matt?
Well, I'm going to see you on Tuesday.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to be rehearsing for my Christmas show, Have You
Heard
of Christmas? At the Duplex on December 12th and 21st at 9:30 p.m. And I'm really excited about that.
I'm so excited for that show. I know a lot of fun people who are coming to it. Oh, it's almost 20 seconds.
Oh, my God. And you know what? It is.
Wow.
Wow.
Have you left your review yet?
Well, I actually have already. I left a review today.
Yes, I've left my review months ago.
Wow. And what did you say for yourself?
I said, what a fun podcast. By the way, I'm a co-host. To that effect, I said something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was very transparent about who I was, where I was coming from.
Right, right.
But, you know, it's like,
you gotta be transparent. It's actually rule number 17 of culture.
You gotta be transparent. So please leave us a review. It really is a great way to help the podcast succeed. We want all as many ears as possible on the podcast so that you guys can all just join in on the fun and talk about culture with us. And who knows what new exciting things will come as we join the pantheon of chart toppers.
Yeah, it's going to be Joe Rogan, mm-hmm. Guys We Fucked, and us.
Sorry, My Favorite Murder.
Bye. Bye.
And we're back with Aparna. Aparna, okay, tell us about, because the marketing for the show, corporate, is very minimalist.
Yes. It's,
I don't really know.
I haven't seen anything about it yet. Explain it to me.
I haven't seen all the promos for it, so I'm not sure even what you've seen.
I've seen Subway posters.
Oh, yeah, that is very minimalist.
Which is just... Comedy Central is corporate. It's very much like what Netflix is doing. Like Netflix is a joke with all their comedy stuff.
Right.
I feel like it's sort of pulling from that same idea. Maybe. So anyway.
I'm not getting it. I'm still not getting
it. It's all it is the ads are Comedy Central is like corporate or something like that.
Oh, okay.
And it's just white letters on black. Nothing else.
Yep.
Now, after having been in the show, do you know what it is more than like what they would let on in the? Because it sounds like the people making the posters don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Oh right. Well, it is a workplace comedy.
Okay.
About a giant soulless corporation. So I think maybe they're trying to emulate that soullessness and how it's this like monolith.
Right.
Brand and everyone sort of just squirms under its reach.
Now, what's your role in the show?
I am the two main characters. They're like junior executives.
Mm-hmm.
And I am their friend who works in HR.
Okay. You're the HR worker.
HR lady.
The oft sort of worshipped or oft
or
maligned.
Maligned.
It's very hard to live in a middle ground with HR. In my experience,
I've never had an HR person. I've only ever worked in restaurants and the like.
Oh, right. They never have.
Absolutely not. And that's the place where they should be the most.
Right.
Absolutely.
So you guys have both dealt with HR people.
Yes.
Yes. So did you pull from real life?
Yeah, but it's funny because this show is like sort of the whole like corporations are people mentality.
Yeah.
Capitalism is king. So I think the HR person in this environment is a little bit always at odds with.
Oh, okay. So you're sort of like an antagonistic.
Yeah,
character.
Or I'm just like struggling with trying to do my job.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I would watch you do that.
Yeah.
For 100 episodes.
And you are serious.
In syndication.
Regular?
I am, yes.
I love that.
I'm so excited. When is the premiere?
January 17th.
Okay. That's a Wednesday.
What? How do you know this?
How did you know that?
I have those that weekend.
But you have a sixth tool.
I have a sixth tool, which is calendars, Gregorian calendars.
That's unbelievable that you just knew that.
No.
You're amazing.
Stop.
So incredible.
So who's involved? I really don't know anything about the show.
Talk to us
about it. Jake Weissman and Matt Ingebrigtsen are the two leads, and they co-wrote and created it with Pat Bishop, who's the director.
Great. I love Jake Weissman a lot.
Yeah, they're both real good in it.
Nice. And then is it, just give us the whole rundown. Single cam. No laugh track. Okay.
Well, I'm out. I'm not watching that.
Nah, you've alienated
I need multicam with a laugh track.
Yeah. With cues.
Do you like any of those shows now? Like any multicam shows?
I'm so out of the multicam loop.
Yeah.
I don't even know what is I should be watching. All I know are comedians I know making fun of young Sheldon.
Right. Of course that
Everyone
is. And that's not even a multicam.
It's not?
I have to break the news about this.
I had no idea. That's amazing.
It is not a multicam. It is a single cam show, and I was shocked when I was watching it. And I'll tell you
why. Do we like that or do we hate
it.
That? Okay, go.
I think I hate it, and I would hate it either way, but I'll tell you what I was watching prior to that, and then I saw that Young Sheldon was what it was, the show Mom.
Oh, which is
with Allison Janney and Anna Faris.
Oh, right, yes.
It's funny.
It's funny. I've seen clips.
I've heard that before, that it is
It's
good.
Funny. And also, I will say this. It's like the land of lost comedic actresses.
What?
CBS
you got
or what?
Jamie Presley's in it.
Oh, yeah.
And Missy Pyle is in
oh,
it.
Oh, great.
And it's like the four of them, and you're like, where are they? Like, and that's where they are.
And I'm sure they're getting CBS money. They're doing fine.
Oh, yeah. They're doing great.
I will say Jamie Presley was in a fat suit.
No.
Mm-hmm. Fat suit comedy is like alive and well on CBS. None of us know about it, but it's happening.
In a fat suit, like. Like her character always.
Her No. I think that her character on the show has gained weight, and it's funny, and she's in a fat suit. And that's funny.
See, I think this is all signaling towards I can't wait for the next prestige multicam show. I think we're due for that.
What would you say the last one was in your mind?
I mean, like, maybe Seinfeld. I mean, whatever. That's like the stock
answer. Well, in terms of actual prestige, in terms of like what garnered awards.
Oh,
like,
the New Adventures of Old Christine.
Yes.
Won things.
Yeah. Like, New Adventures of Old Christine won things.
Like How I Met Your Mother.
How I Met Your Mother. And then like, there's also 2.5 Men was nominated for shit. Doesn't mean it was actually good. But in terms of prestige, I guess Mom, she won Best Supporting Actress a couple times.
But I'm saying like something that is like...
actually good.
Not even that. Because I'm sure these shows are great. Mm. But it's like something that like is not necessarily pandering towards like...
Of course.
Middle America, which is fine. Like, I'm just saying there's plenty of that.
Populist is populist for a reason.
Populist, yeah.
A lot of people like it.
And so I just want there to be, like, a multicam show that's, like, a little bit like, whoa, this is, like, specialized in some way. You know, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
But corporate, okay, I'm so excited now because it's got great people. It's got you, and it's a very relevant premise.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't wait to see it. What else can you tell us about it?
So the CEO is played by Lance Reddick, and he's real great.
Oh, I know him from Lost.
Yeah, Lost and The Wire even further back.
Yeah, God. He's kind of scary.
He is. He's perfect.
Oh,
he's
great.
So good.
Okay, great casting already.
Okay, great casting.
Okay, great.
I want to say one more thing about Mom.
Okay.
Because sure. You moved on to another conversation, like the wind.
Wait, what's the premise of that, really?
And this is what I want to say.
Okay.
It is bordering on a prestige topic.
Okay.
Because it's about a mother and daughter who are both recovering alcoholics.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And everyone on the show is a recovering alcoholic.
That's great.
Oh, that is good.
Yeah. Which is good. Yeah. And also, I think it's not like, she fell off the wagon. It's not that kind of humor.
Right.
It's just about these women who are all, and it's all women. The cast is all women.
Yeah.
And it's about these women that have this kind of community that they were alcoholics. Every episode, I think, has like at least a scene in AA where they're all kind of chatting and talking to each other. And it's actually this kind of nice thread. And it's actually, there were some moments in it that were actually funny. Yes, there was a fat suit. But, you know, I guess on CBS you can't have it all. But it was a different kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Right.
I was like, oh, I can actually see that being brought into a pitch meeting and being like, yeah, that's actually really interesting.
And you know, it's not like, you know, your 30 Rocks or your whatevers didn't have fat suits either. Or employed some sort of humor that was in that same vein.
What are you saying? Sure. That Tina Fey isn't perfect?
No, I'm saying that like that kind of humor.
It's okay if you are saying that.
That kind of humor sort of pervades everything.
Right,
permeates through everything.
Oh yeah, I mean, like, there's gonna be easy jokes everywhere. It's just that this character's like arc right now is that she's fully in a fat suit, and it's just like it's just funny that that's happening, and we don't know.
We don't know.
And what do you mean we don't know? Oh,
like,
yeah.
We're not
watching
that
it.
Show. Isn't like our jam.
Right,
sure,
right,
but
right.
It's like, I mean, you have like fat suit Betty Draper. And like it's not a comedy, but it's like it's that same thing of like, whoa, like this is her story, is that she gained weight? Like,
well, that's different, I think.
Okay. All right.
Oh.
Here's why I think it's different. Because Betty's weight gain, that's like a dramatic beat in her
character's
life. Whereas Jamie Presley wearing a fat suit on Mom is to laugh.
Figures into her journey coming out of alcoholism.
You know what? Maybe. I'm just saying the way it was depicted in both. Well, you know what? Maybe I'm wrong.
Wow. Oh,
they both also had a dark black wig. Because, of course, brunettes, I don't know. What's going on?
They look like a fucking mess.
They look much worse.
They look much worse.
Much, much worse. I mean, I think they're... I never watched Workaholics. I feel like I've been, like, really jonesing for, like, a workplace comedy, too. Because
I'm interested.
Yeah, I wasn't a big Workaholics person either, but it was, you know, massively popular. That was
huge.
A single cam, right?
That was single cam.
Yeah.
I feel like some people say, like, it paved the way for Broad City in some way. There was just, like, this, like, really...
Maybe the buddy vibe?
The buddy vibe, and, like, you know, you flip it, and this might seem simplistic too, but you flip that, and like, what if it were two women?
Oh, right.
Well, it feels like Comedy Central kind of has like
is balancing
two audiences right now. They have like their Broad City and Inside Amy Schumer audience, and then you got your like Workaholics and like Tosh audience.
Yeah.
So where would you say that this show fits in tonally if you were
to that's what's interesting. It doesn't feel like it fits squarely in either of those.
Right, right, right.
Because I think there are veins of, I wouldn't say it's bro-y at all, which I think Tosh and Workaholics might welcome bros more easily.
We could call them bro-y.
But it's not anti-bro either, so I feel like they might not know what exactly how to feel about it.
But see, I like that this is like a four-quadrant, a four-quadrant show.
Mm-hmm.
Hits all the quads.
Yeah.
What are the quads you would call?
I would say, you know, I'm not going to, you know, traditionally you would break this down by age group and by gender. But
well, that's what the industry is doing, and so we should do it too, because the industry is, of course, right. When I choose the best picture, they're all right.
Yes.
Absolutely. I'm not disputing that. I'm just saying, let's all make our own quadrants maybe as an exercise. I'll start.
Okay, go ahead.
You know, people who stay at home and, you know, have like a little tub of chicken salad in the fridge.
Seems like a small quadrant, but okay.
No, there's a lot of people fall under this umbrella. And another quadrant is people who will write down on a piece of paper like must shop for candles.
Again, seems small.
These are so specific.
Yes,
quadrants.
And then, but you would be surprised.
No,
And that this is so general. And then people who write down on a piece of paper, this is a different quadrant, must go shopping for candles and chocolate. Yeah.
How many quadrants are there?
Four.
There's only one more.
There's only one more.
So you have people that write down must buy candles.
Uh-huh.
You have people with the chicken salad.
Yep.
People that do both?
Who write down must buy candles and chocolate.
Okay, and what's the fourth quadrant that encompasses everyone else?
People who live in Nebraska.
Okay.
Those are the four quadrants. And I think I'm so excited that corporate hits all of those.
That's amazing.
What would you say the quadrants are for you?
For me, there's two.
That's not a quadrant. Those are just two halves.
Okay, for me, there's four.
Okay.
There's ocean people.
Yes.
Mountain people.
Yes.
Desert people.
Yes.
And forest people.
Which one are you?
Me?
Yes.
Ocean.
I'm from
Long Island, which is an island. Surrounded by water, so I have to be an ocean person. And there's very little mountains or desert or... Well, there's forests, but, you know.
Sure.
I'm probably closer to that quadrant, but I'm an ocean person.
I mean, I
can breathe underwater, too. I should say that.
Okay.
I thought it was two quadrants.
You thought it was two quadrants?
Mm-hmm.
No, I thought it was... So the two axes are age and gender.
So but I thought it was young males, 18 to 34, and then everyone else.
Really? Wow. Well, that's... I think Aparna's making a comment.
I'd like to make a comment.
She'd love to make a comment, and you know what she
has to say, and she has.
What are the four quadrants for you?
Well, I guess if they get one quadrant, then the other three would be everyone else, and separated by what? Old babies.
Yeah. Old babies.
And third would be non-age conforming.
Wow,
non-age conforming.
That's one we haven't gotten to yet. Yes. Non-age conforming.
Truly, I mean, who knows?
I identify as 19.
I'm not going to be one. I'm not going to be someone who speaks to identity politics around age, whether it's valid or not. But you know what? It's a quadrant, and so we've acknowledged their existence.
Whatever happened with Rachel Dolezal?
She's still out.
She's still out there.
I'm sure she had or has a book coming up.
Oh, you gotta get the book.
You know,
if you're Rachel Dolezal and you don't have a book, you missed the boat.
Who would play her in a movie?
Meryl Streep. Meryl Streep, Aparna.
You're right.
You know what?
Why didn't I even think about that one?
Yeah, I don't know who would play her.
I'll
tell you what.
Yeah.
Do you remember when Angelina Jolie straight up did do blackface?
No.
In what movie?
A Mighty Heart. Where she played
Angelina Jolie?
Yeah, she played the journalist Marianne
Pearl. I think you're talking about A Mighty Wind.
I
forgot
about
she played
that.
The journalist Marianne Pearl,
no
who
one
was black.
Ever said anything about?
Yeah, she was nominated for awards.
That's so weird.
This was within 10 years ago. Yeah, this is a thing.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and it was played straight up. It wasn't like some like comments on that like Tropic Thunder.
I mean,
which still is like right on the edge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like. it was fully her playing someone who was not
what
her ethnicity. Yeah.
I take back what I said about Catherine Hahn, because that would be like a little controversial. I think you need to cast someone who has the background of both, and that would be like a Maya Rudolph.
You know?
If it's not Meryl.
If it's not Meryl or...
we of course let Meryl...
And then if it's not Maya, then it's Catherine.
Maya Rudolph actually is an amazing actress.
Yeah.
Of course she is.
Did you see Away We Go?
No. Is that the one with Jim Krasinski?
John Krasinski.
John Krasinski.
Yes. Jim, of course, is a character from The Office.
Gyllenhaal.
But they blend together. They're very similar.
Very similar. Maggie Gyllenhaal. And then...
Maggie Gyllenhaal was good in that.
And if you're married to Paul Thomas Anderson, you've got to have the chops. She's great in Big Mouth. So I think this is like, I'm scared to watch the show a little bit because it's gonna feel like really
real.
Well,
that wasn't, now you put it in her head that she's come here and made the show seem terrifying.
No, not terrifying, because it's gonna feel like really, it's gonna just elicit like, wow, capitalism is bad. It's this bad. It's this bad at every level. It's this bad at every company. But you know what? You're making it humorous. So that will be...
It's actually rule number 75 of culture. You gotta make it humorous.
Don't make fun of my words. I know my heart. No, I don't know my words, but I know my heart.
That's my quote.
Quote Matt Rogers.
Look, I'm gonna watch the show regardless. I think you've done a great job of promoting
Thank
it. I'm
you.
Certainly not gonna come here and say that you've done a shitty job promoting it. I'm not gonna come over and shit on my guests. Aparna, we've been trying to get Aparna on the show for what? 17 years?
17 years.
Oh my god.
And you know
Since
what?
Since I was 1 year
Since
old.
Since you were 1 year old?
Since you're one, she of course identifies as being 18-year-old woman.
18-year-old. Aparna, I think you could be cast as young as 5.
Thank you.
Yeah, I know I'm like maybe like, you know, maybe I don't know if you're, you know, for your next role, if you want to play under your age, over your age, but I think you can reach that far back.
That's so nice.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen Lady Bird?
Yes.
I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't either, but I was like, oh, she's so young. But then she's playing a little younger.
And she's playing she's playing like 17.
Which is so refreshing.
Yeah. She is, well, by the time this episode is out, she'll have hosted SNL.
Mm.
I think she'll be wonderful.
I'm excited to
see
her.
I'm very excited to see her.
I think she'll be wonderful. I think she's a talented actress. And also, it's a very Irish episode because the musical guest is U2.
U2.
What?
Can you believe that? How huge that is for Ireland?
That's a big win.
That
for
episode
Ireland?
Is the big, they better have some Ireland sketches.
They
yes.
Finger.
I want to see a Blarney Stone.
Although, can I tell you something?
Yes.
I was recently in a room where there was being sketches pitched.
Yeah.
And somebody wanted to do a sketch about the potato famine. And somebody spoke up and said, we can't do that because it might offend some Irish people.
What?
Or there was like a potato joke. And someone was like, we can't do that joke because it might offend Irish people. And that's when I think we've just gone too far. We need to be able to make jokes about potatoes.
Yeah.
With Irish people in the audience, and we have to laugh at that.
Sure. I mean, I
call me Jerry Seinfeld about that. I won't go on any campus where I can't be an Irish person and sit there and take a potato joke.
Oh my gosh. Was it punching up?
I guess that's a valid question. I don't remember.
If it's punching up, then maybe. But you can't punch down at starving Irish people.
Yeah, was it taking down Big Tato?
Big Tato?
I think it's happened long ago enough that we can talk about the potatoes.
Okay.
Don't you think?
Okay.
What's your disposition now?
Nothing. I'm agreeing. I'm agreeing with you. Aparna, let's say you go to a college. Do you still do colleges?
Mm-hmm.
You go to a college. They say you can't joke about blank. And you and whatever this is, you walk. You go, I'm sorry, I can't. Do the show.
Oh, what would that be?
Yeah.
I guess depression?
Sure. Okay,
yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you'd be like, I can't do that. I can't do the show. That's fair. Do you have a writer at all when you go to places?
I keep forgetting I have to fill one out.
Really? Okay.
I have the default one right now.
Which
and
is?
Water.
It's water and like usually they'll put out like 3 granola bars and like 2 pieces of fruit and it just looks real sad.
But that's a solid writer.
I don't know.
You
I would
should ask,
ask
for more.
I would have decadence.
Yeah.
I would. I definitely would. I would get probably like a bowl of cherries.
Oh.
And, you know, a little bit of microwaved popcorn.
popcorn by nearby, just microwave, nothing gourmet.
Yeah.
And like a can of whipped cream or something, you know, for the cherries.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And of course, there couldn't be anyone speaking to me the whole time.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't want to be spoken to.
That seems reasonable.
That one's hard because there's all those student papers who want a piece of you.
Yeah, and I would not want to talk to them. And if they did speak to me, I would really, really, really hurt somebody. That would be awful.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I still wanna ask Aparna what would the additional items be if you were
if we had given you, we'd say, Aparna, we can get you anything for your last Culturistas appearance.
Oh, what would I have requested?
Yeah.
Oh man.
We
probably like the
latest
self help book.
Yes.
Oh, okay. To read while you're waiting for this to have to go on. Yeah. Just in the, while we're setting up the mics, just skim through it.
Like bedroom slippers.
Ooh, yeah. Yes.
I want to not wear shoes. Maybe like a low key pillow.
Uh huh.
Yeah. Just to hold.
Just something to, just items that you could use to build a nest.
Yes, absolutely.
Nesting self care items.
Mm-hmm. One quick question before we go to I Don't Think So, Honey. And this is really important. When you get home, shoes come off.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, me too. Right away.
I feel weird walking around my apartment with my shoes on. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
I thought you were going to say, I feel weird walking around with shoes. And I was going to say, yes, I don't want to wear no shoes.
If I could get away with not wearing shoes in New York, I would.
Mm. Yeah.
But
yeah.
It seems like a risk.
Seems like a risk.
Do you want to know something kind of weird about me? I can't sleep with socks on.
I think that's not weird.
But here's why.
Oh.
There's a qualifier. I can't sleep with socks on because when I was little, my uncle told us that if we slept with socks on, then the boogeyman would get us and come out of the closet.
I
still can't sleep with socks on.
Why would he do that?
Because he's a terrorist.
Oh.
Stop.
An emotional terrorist.
You have to grow out of that.
I know. It's so hard. I'm also superstitious because of my mother. Don't step on any cracks. Don't walk under any ladders.
Yeah.
What?
I know. It's really crazy. Also, the number 13, terrified of the thing.
What?
Oh, the number. The number itself.
Number 13, don't like it. Black cats, I will turn around and go the other way.
Oh, boy.
I'm not kidding. I'm very superstitious.
Mm.
Oh, dang.
As Michael Scott on The Office say, I'm not superstitious, but I am a little stitious.
Yes,
which I think is one of the great
comedic
lines.
That's a great comedic quote. And, you know, on that note, I think it's time to go into I Don't Think So, Honey.
Yeah. 1 minute of quotes.
1 minute of quotes. Now, for those of you who don't know, I Don't Think So, Honey is our segment where we take 1 minute to rail against something.
This episode is very NPR. We're like very, like,
so
we're very measured. We love the vibe.
I love the vibe. This is Matt. You said you had one ready.
I do. I have one.
Oh, thank
gosh. I need to speak on this.
Okay, so this is Matt Rodgers. So Matt will go, I'll go, and then Aparna.
I'll be ready.
Perfect. Okay, so this is Matt Rodgers. I Don't Think So, Honey. Time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey. Meghan McCain. Listen, I would take 15 Jedediah Bilas before one Meghan McCain. I Don't Think So, Honey. Meghan McCain, you are not who I want to see co-hosting The View. Listen, if you're going to be conservative and blonde on The View, be tolerable. Listen, if when they turn to you to talk about the frilly pop culture stuff, have something to say. Meghan McCain, you're always like, I don't know why we're talking about this when it's like about Taylor Swift. It's like, bitch, that's what you are there to do. You're there to have an opinion of you on everything.
30 seconds.
Girl, I will say this. I Don't Think So, Honey, The View, when the second most intelligent person on that whole panel is Sarah Haynes, we have a problem.
Okay.
I will say this. Joy, we get it, Joy. It's the same. It's been the same. Sonny Hostin, you can say you're a lawyer as many
seconds
as you want. I don't think you're that smart. You do not seem that smart to me. Meghan McCain, you offer nothing. Bring back Jedediah Bila. Whoopi, you are amazing and definitely the icon, but you check in and check out. But this is about Meghan McCain, and I Don't Think So, Honey. Meghan McCain, the daughter of John McCain.
And that's 1 minute. Wow.
That kind of became
you
I Don't Think So, Honey, The View.
Say.
Well, can I tell you, I don't like Meghan McCain.
Of course.
It's like, I would rather have Elizabeth Hasselbeck than Meghan McCain.
At least she's compelling.
At least she's like, I don't know. At least there's like some spirit to her. Like Meghan McCain, it's like, she's been on, I watched The View. And Meghan McCain, she's been on the show for like 2 months. We had to celebrate her birthday and her wedding. Bitch, we don't know you.
Oh, wow.
Earn it.
Mm.
I looked at HPJ in the eyes when I say this.
Yeah.
Meghan McCain has to earn it.
Sure.
What has she done to earn it? Her father
is who he is? No. Also, stop acting like it's cable news. You need to take a daytime talk show hosting course.
Okay.
Because you are not welcoming. I don't know. I don't like her.
There's an art to it, and she's not. There's an aptitude gap.
And also, she does that thing. I was talking to a friend, and mm-hmm. he brought something up really astute. Mm-hmm. She does that little spoiled rich girl thing, which is the second you don't let her say everything she wanted to say, she throws a fit. It's like if she doesn't get all the way through a thought, and like somebody jumps in, which they do on The View,
because
we just ain't got time.
No time.
She'll throw up her hands and be like, well, I guess that I'm not going to be able to do what I'm supposed to be here to do, which is to give the other perspective.
Oh, you can't do that on TV.
Like, shut up.
You can't do that on TV.
And they fired Jedediah Bila to get her. And look, Jedediah Bila is like a libertarian, and like I had my problems with her. Like sometimes I was like, oh God, that's insane, the things that she says. And she was like one of those people that's like, Hillary, I could never vote for. You know, like one of those.
Sure.
But
you would rather have her back than...
At least at the end of the day, she was warm and like had fun things to say about things that weren't just politics. Meghan McCain is ice cold.
Mm.
And I'm not into what I think is, and I'm just going to say this, ABC only having her on the show so they can have access to McCain in his final years.
What?
I think that's what it is.
What do you mean access to McCain?
I think that they can get John McCain on the show.
For an interview?
For, you know.
Oh.
I think it's a whole ABC News conspiracy.
That's a long con.
Why else do we need Meghan McCain?
Because she like has sort of been on the periphery of like she writes articles every now and then.
I want to like her.
I think
I'm
maybe
sure she did. I want to like her. I keep wanting to like her. And then she says things like they were all going around the table and saying who their celebrity crush was. And she said Paul Ryan.
Oh my God.
Like, get the fuck out of here. It's not even cute to think
celebrity
he's hot anymore.
Crush. My celebrity Paul crush. Ryan.
And the audience groaned. And I was like, thank you.
That is
literally
so
Sonny
funny.
Hostin, who I'm sorry, I don't like. And
is there any
Sarah Haynes? They both said Idris Elba.
Okay, fine.
And I think I forget who Joy and Whoopi said or whatever. And then they got to Meghan McCain. She's like, "Well, mine's Paul Ryan." And the audience goes, "Oh, like of course it is."
So,
dummy.
Is there any good host on The View right now?
They're all good. I mean, Whoopi is when she wants to be there.
Yeah,
she's great. But sometimes you just get the sense that Whoopi is just giving takes to the audience. Like, can you believe we're talking about this? And yes, Whoop, we can. This is The View.
Right.
You signed up for it. You're the moderator of the show. You've been on the show for 10 years. You damn well know that we are talking about this.
Uh-huh.
Well, you are there. You see the prompts beforehand. You are not cooler than this show, Whoopi Goldberg.
She's superior.
Superior.
I don't like when she acts
superiority.
Like that. Sarah Haynes, she's really giving her best effort. I don't even know who she was before the show. She's like the blonde, liberal, fun one.
I have no
one.
Idea who
she's like always pregnant. She's very that.
Okay.
Joy is Joy.
Yeah.
And then there's Sunny Hostin, who, I'm sorry, I don't get it.
I gotta say, and this is not just because she's a podcast sister, but when Michelle was on it.
Michelle Collins, it was never better.
It was never better.
She's the queen, though.
She's the queen of talk.
The best of when it was in recent years was Whoopi, Michelle Collins, Raven Simonier, which I'm sorry, I love Raven. Even though she said kooky stuff on that show,
she's a kooky.
I love Raven.
Uh-huh.
Fine.
And I guess Jedediah Bila was like a conservative.
Who was the Fuller House?
Oh,
person?
Candace Cameron Bure, and
she's a dummy.
She's a dummy, but
she's conservative.
Yeah, she's very conservative. But also, I appreciated the fact that like she was the conservative one, and also was like by far the dumbest. So it was like she'd be like, I don't know. Every day I pray, and everyone was like, oh God, like, and it was like fun to have that. Now it's like you have Meghan McCain who's like superior about
her
point of view, which is the trickle down works. You know what I mean? It's disgusting.
Yeah. Interesting. Ugh. I love your whole breakdown of that.
I know. You had so many passionate takes.
Yeah.
That's what you get out of Matt Rogers. That I don't think so, honey.
Yeah. So do you have one?
I think so.
I hope that you do. He's rarely ever prepared upon it.
Oh, I'm never prepared.
That's okay.
You're both out with you both. I'm going to start hosting the show with Michelle Collins. She'll do it.
She'll do it.
And Bowen Yang's time starts
now.
I don't think so, honey. The line at Hale and Hardy today, November 28th, 2017. I went in there with a simple mission. A medium chicken pot pie, no bread, no crackers, just the damn soup. I ran into my good friend Sushil, who works over at Comedy Central. Very nice guy. We said hi, we exchanged pleasantries. It was the highlight of my experience at this fucking Hale and Hardy today because there's a huge line that goes out the door and I go, what is going on? There's no one waiting at the soup line. It's everyone's waiting at the cashier line.
What?
I don't think so, honey.
30 seconds.
Not being able to manage the crowd during the lunch rush. I don't think so, honey. This is Hudson Square. This is, you know, not the busiest neighborhood in Manhattan during the day, but it's a busy one. Mm-hmm. You've got a lot of people coming in from a lot of different industries and backgrounds and positions and levels of, you know, up the food chain. I don't think so, honey. You gotta figure this out. I had one soup and it took me 40 minutes.
5 seconds.
40 minutes for soup? I don't think so, honey. I don't think so, honey.
That's 1 minute.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Beautiful.
That was really well paced.
Thank you.
As someone
there
who
were
was
levels.
Complaining about pacing earlier, I was like,
thank
well,
you.
Someone knows about pacing.
I've learned from Call Me By Your Name what good and bad pacing is. You know what? You gotta figure out.
We're going to get really... The thing is...
You're going to you know, get partner, a lot imagine, of shade.
You can imagine, we have a large gay audience. Yeah. And for us to be talking shit about Call Me By Your
I'm
Name,
scared.
I would say the last hour I loved. The
okay.
first hour, if they rode their fucking bike to the lake one more time, I was going to get out of there.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't see one more bike ride to the lake, Aparna.
I'm just... the end.
It's not...
The ending was like a departure from the book, which is fine, but... The takeaway from the movie is that, you know, he feels a certain way, and it's that's not really the case.
Well,
in the
that's,
story.
That is unfair of you to say about the film, because he's in a whole different place in his life in the film than he is in the book.
But in the book, you see the journey, and so that's all I'll say. Okay, Aparna, we're sorry. We just
no,
had to hash
I
this
don't.
Out.
Know, okay, I don't know if I can summon up enough passion, but I'm gonna try.
You keep it as low energy or as high energy as
okay.
you want. Do not feel. The need to hit a certain decibel. But this is a partner in Charles. I don't think so, honey. And her time starts now.
I don't think so, honey. Friends who don't text during holidays like Thanksgiving weekend, because I feel like we're all with our families and our loved ones and our chosen families and loved ones during this time.
Yes.
And obviously we're all supposed to be putting in quality time, but everyone reaches a limit with how much family you can be around. And then if no one else is texting, I feel like I'm the only one not experiencing fulfilled relationships.
Oh my God.
And then I feel extra lonely and isolated, and I need other people to be like, hey, are you tired of listening to... your mom make gentle nudges about how soon you should have kids before they might have, you know,
seconds.
Birth defects or whatever
oh
it is.
God.
And if no one else texts, it really feels like you're alone in the universe.
No.
And especially if they just leave you hanging
five
on
seconds.
An emotional, you know, sore that you've opened up. And then you just have to look at it and see the non-response and be like, I guess you don't feel that way.
And that's 1 minute.
Oh.
Yeah.
But finish this thought, because
that was it.
That was it. I mean, first of all, completely appropriate that it was just at this nice NPR tone, this NPR level, because I kind of felt that way too. I felt a little too, I mean, obviously for different, completely different reasons, different circumstances. I was like, oh yeah, I guess I'm just like at sea here socially, and I feel a little stir crazy. I don't know. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know if that's exactly what
well,
you felt.
Well, I think everyone feels a little stir crazy when they've had enough like home time
yeah.
or family time, but then they feel like there's some kind of social more to not be like texting with your usual social group. Or,
right.
I don't know
See,
what it is.
I'm friends with a lot of trash people
oh,
who
good.
Are on their phones, and so that's not an issue
oh,
for us.
Oh, that's great.
It must be like the next level up. Because I,
yeah.
yeah, like, I don't know.
You
who are you? Who
drag
are you,
your friends
yeah,
down.
Yeah,
I would love to hear you
down.
Call someone out right now. Who didn't text you back?
Joe?
Was it Joe Firestone?
Yeah, it was Joe Firestone.
Yeah,
fucking
gotta,
Joe Firestone.
We gotta go get her.
Get
we
her.
Gotta go get her.
Who does she think she is?
Well, drag her back in here.
I think it's because she's a good person.
No.
No, I don't think so.
You know what? I take back what you said about only trash people text back, because no one's above it. There's an etiquette. You respond if you're engaged, especially if it's one of your good friends, like Aparna is to Joe, and that is not acceptable. I would take Matt to task if he
If I didn't respond to Bowen, oof.
Oh, you wouldn't.
But full disclosure, I think I did not text her. I think I thought about it, and then I was like, well, if she was a good friend, she would text me.
She would.
Right.
Knowing how I was feeling.
Absolutely. And you're right about that.
She failed.
I don't know if you feel like this with Joe, but I can feel how Bowen feels in the air.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes when he's gone for a long time, and I know he's landing again, mm-hmm. I will be sitting in my chair, which I'm doing when he's not in the States. Yeah. I'm just sitting in my chair with my head down. And then when I feel him touch down, I will rise up and I will fill with life again. And I'll say, hello, friend.
Oh, my
gosh. It's almost like very Luke and Leia.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's very that.
Yes.
That was my understanding of how friendship works.
Absolutely. And Joe hasn't met that standard.
No.
Yeah, but I'll give her time.
Give her time. Because you know who else needed time?
Princess Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep. I want to say two podcast-related things before we wrap up. I want to say that you should absolutely head over to Apple Podcasts and you should give us a 5-star rating. Ooh. And you should give us a nice review, because this really helps the podcast rise to the top. And I'm serious, guys. If you guys listening to this, you know, it wouldn't kill you.
And look, you know, leave it, maybe leave a rule of culture in your review, and maybe we'll
read it,
we'll canonize it.
And maybe by maybe we mean definitely.
Maybe. And no, again, it really helps with visibility and all that.
Yeah.
It hacks the algorithm. Also,
and I want to say one other thing, and it's good that we say this while our guest is here, because our guest is actually a surprise story pirate.
Oh, right.
Yes.
And why I always forget that you're a story pirate.
Well, I was shocked that you knew, because I was one a long time ago, and I haven't actually done any story pirates related stuff in a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. I think you've
shed the skin.
Incredible story pirate.
Thank you.
Did you enjoy doing it when you did it?
I loved it. It was so fun.
And you came from a great class of people, because I think you were on the same time as like maybe Natasha Rothwell was.
Yeah, but she was New York and I was LA. I think that's why.
Okay. That's it.
That's why I don't know a lot of the people who were one.
But still an alumna.
Sometimes you don't even know it. A superstar is a secret story pirate. Now listen, I bring up story pirates because I would love, especially if you're out there and you have kids, you should check out the Story Pirates podcast on Gimlet.
Yes.
And they're so amazing. And I'm in a couple episodes. Have you been in a podcast episode yet?
I haven't been in the new iteration yet.
Soon.
But I love, I as a listener, someone who's not has not been involved yet, it's such a joyful thing.
Rachel Winitsky, a friend of the show,
is the head writer
of the podcast. It's very good and very cute. And some of the stories and some of the songs and the music, it's just amazing.
It'll just put a smile on your face.
It really will. And also, guys, it's short. It's like 22 minutes. It's so good. And they have interviews with the kids that wrote the stories that get adapted. Oh, it's so good, Aparna.
It's so nice.
And I just wanted to throw them a little bit of love.
And one more podcast thing, you know, Aparna's podcast with Jacqueline Novak. Mm-hmm. And any other co-hosts?
No, just
you and Jacqueline.
Just
Blue Woman Group.
Mm-hmm.
You know what?
Blue Woman Group.
Listen to some episodes, and if you run a podcasting network, maybe throw your hat in for the bidding war.
Thank you.
I love that.
You know?
Now, this has been a very fun, nice episode. I'm really happy that we were able to spoil $1 Million Baby.
Yes.
And
talk and intellectualize Sesame Street.
Yes, in that way.
Absolutely. Aparna, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
We love you very much.
I love you. Thank
Likewise.
You.
Likewise.
Now we should leave with the song.
Yes.
Oh, the way you smile, Meryl Streep, in every film. You win an Oscar, Meryl Streep, for every film you smile in.
Bye.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.